This is a poem in memory of two old teachers of mine who were wonderful people. One taught in a university, one taught in a coffee house. They taught beautifully, either way, in either setting or locale. They both knew a great deal about European literature. And as a young man, working in the coffee house, washing dishes, with an education to work for that particular employer. And in the university, it was also an education to work for someone who now dead, died of pneumonia. This is called Elegy with a Thimble Full of Water in the Cage. And it's actually, if you have it, any occasion to think of it, it's actually about the sibilant Cumae, who was bothered by Apollo and who protested to the gods for sort of molestation or rape or whatever by Apollo. And they said, well, you get one wish, and she asked for eternal life. And she asked for eternal life, but she forgot to ask for eternal youth as well. So as she got older, she sort of wrinkled and shrank into herself through the centuries. And that's what this poem is about. Elegy with a thimble full of water in the cage. It's not only about her, it's personal as well. It's a list of what I cannot touch. Some dandelions and black-eyed Susans growing back like innocence itself with its thoughtless style over an abandoned labor camp south of Piedra. And the oldest trees in that part of Paris with a name I forget, propped up with sticks to keep their limbs from cracking. And beneath such quiet, a woman with a cane. And knowing if I came back, I could not find them again. And a cat, I remember, who slept on the burnished mahogany and the scooped-out beveled place on the counter below the iron grillwork, the way you had to pass your letter over him as he slept through those warm afternoons in New Hampshire, the gray fur stirring a little as he inhaled, the small rural post office growing smaller, then lost, tucked into the shoreline of the lake when I look back. Country music from a lone radio in an orchard there, the first frost already on the ground. And those who slipped out of their names as if called out of them, as if they had been waiting to be called. Stavros lecturing from his bequeathed chair at the Café Midi, in the old Tower Theater District, his unending solo above the traffic on Olive, asking if we knew what happened to the sibilant Cumae after Ovid had told her story, after Petronius had swept the grains of sand from her, how, granted eternal life, she had forgotten to ask for youth, and so, as she kept aging, as her body shrank within itself, and the centuries passed. She finally became so tiny they had to put her into a jar, at which point Petronius lost track of her, lost interest of her, in her, at which point she began to suffocate in the jar, suffocate without being able to die, until finally a Phoenician sailor slipped the gray piece of pottery, its hue like an overcast sky and revealing it even less, into his pocket, and sold it on the docks at Piraeus to a shop owner, who, hearing her gasp, placed her in a birdcage on a side street just off Ammonia Square, not to possess her, but to protect her from pedestrians. And the boys of Athens rattled the bars of her cage with sticks as they ran past, yelling, "Sybil, Sybil, what do you want?" Each generation having to listen more closely than the one before it to hear the faintest whispered rasp from the small bitter seed of her tongue as she answered them with the same remark passing through time, "I want to die." As time passed, as she gradually grew invisible, the boys had to press their ears against the cage to hear her. And then one day the voice became too faint. No one could hear it. And after that they stopped telling the story. And then it wasn't a story. It was only an empty cage that hung outside a shop among the increasing noise of traffic and from the square itself, blaring from loudspeakers, the shattered glass and bread of political speeches that went on half the night, and the intermittent music of strip shows in summer when the doors of the bars were left open, and then, Stavros said, the sun shone straight through the cage. You could see there was nothing inside it, he said, unless you noticed how one of the little perches swung back and forth, almost imperceptibly there. Though the street was hot, windless. Or unless you thought you saw a trace of something flicker across the small mirror above the thimble full of water, which, of course, shouldn't have been there, which should have evaporated like the voice that went on whispering ceaselessly its dry rage without listening, without listeners. He said that even if anyone heard it, they would not have recognized the dialect as anything human. He would lie awake, the only boy in Athens who still heard it repeating its wish to die. And he was not surprised, he said, when the streets, the bars, the strip shows began to fill with German officers, or when the loudspeakers from the small platform in the square were, one day, shattered into 1,000 pieces. As the years passed, as even the sunlight began to seem as if it was listening to him outside the windows of the Midi, he began to lose interest in stories and to speak only in abstractions, to speak only of theories, never of things. Then he began to come in less frequently, and when he did, he no longer spoke at all. And so, along the boulevards in the winter, the bare limbs of the trees one passed in the city again became only the bare limbs of trees. No girl stepped into them to tell us of their stillness. We would hear rumors of Stavros following the gypsy Pentecostalists into their tents, accounts of him speaking in tongues. Glossolalia, he once said, which was all speech and none. In a way, it didn't matter anymore. Something in time was fading. And though girls still came to the cafe to flirt or argue politics or buy drugs from the two ancient boys expressionless as lizards now as they bent above a chessboard, by summer the city parks had grown dangerous. No one went there anymore to drink wine, dance, and listen to metal amplified until it seemed, as it had seemed once, the bitter, cleansing angel released at last from what fettered it inside us. And maybe there wasn't any angel after all. The times had changed. It became difficult to tell for sure. And anyway, there was a law against it now, a law against gathering at night in the parks was actually all that the law said was forbidden for us to do. But of course it came to the same thing. It meant you were no longer permitted to know or to decide for yourself whether there was an angel inside you or whether there wasn't. Poverty is what happens at the end of any story, including this one, when there are too many stories, when you can believe in all of them and so believe in none. When one condition is as good as any other. The swirl of wood grain in this desk, is it the face of an angel? Or the photograph of a girl, the only widow in her high school, as she decided to turn herself into a tree? It was a rainy afternoon and her van skidded at 60. For a split second, the trunk of an oak had never seemed so solemn as it did then, widening before her. Or is it misfortune itself, or the little grimace the woman makes with her mouth above the cane, there, then not there, then there again? Or is it the place where the comparisons, the little comforts like the cane she's leaning on, give way beneath us. What do you do when nothing calls you anymore? When you turn and there's only the light filling the empty window? When the angel fasting inside you has grown so thin it flies out of you a last time without your knowing it, and the water dries up in its thimble, and the one swing in the cage comes to rest after its almost imperceptible, almost endless swaying. I'm going to stare at the world grain of wood in this desk I'm bent over until it's infinite. I'm going to make it talk. I'm going to make it confess everything. I was about to ask if you were cold, if you wanted a sweater, because, well, as Stavros would say, before he began one of those stories that seemed endless, the sun pressing against the windows of the cafe and glinting off the stalled traffic just beyond them, this could take a while. I passed the letter I wrote you over the sleeping cat and beyond the iron grillwork into the irretrievable.